3Jar, which I've written, which of course is talking about free software, and you've also got this phrase, open source Java. You'll see these phrases used interchangeably, greatly. And they do mean more or less the same thing. If you look at the open source definition on the open source website, if you look at the free software definition on the GNU website, the Free Software Foundation website, sorry, you will discover that to all intents and purposes they're the same thing. However, there has been some cases in the past of some companies opening up their software without even quite calling it open source or making the source available or whatever, but still imposing restrictions on the way that piece of software can be used, whether it can be used commercially, and so on. So I will try to reduce this confusion as much as possible by talking about free software in the context of OpenJDK. Although some hotels are potentially word phrase open source. As I say, the meaning is very, very similar. But the big advantage to me of using the phrase free software rather than using the word open source is that it removes the confusion with some pieces of source code being made available on the web on a restrictive license. OpenJDK, FreeJava, is entirely free software. You can do anything you want, it doesn't have this field of use restrictions. You can read the code, you can download it, you can do all of these things with it. So it qualifies entirely as a piece of free software. Okay, 16th of May 2006, Sun made their big announcement. We're going to open source Sun's Java software portfolio. They have grand words for all of these things, but basically, this enormous slab of source code, so announced that it was going to open it all up.
Is the Java thing?
I hope so.
So a bit like.
We haven't got very far anymore. For years, we've been hearing rumors, not just from Sun, but from the other suppliers of Java that were licensed by Sun, that they were going to free their implementations. One or two, I was actually involved in negotiations with Red Hat. And what seems to have happened is that people were, these are people other than Sun, were proceeding down the road of trying to figure out a way of freeing up the Java implementation. But in the end, because of the legal agreements that they had with a variety of other bodies, including Sun, they haven't been able to do it. So we'd seen this several times before, people talking about freeing Java, and nothing had ever happened. So I was really pretty skeptical to begin with, even after this news. So that was my first response. I don't really, you know, okay, they're going to release it, but they'll release it under some horrible license that means that people actually won't be able to use it in some ways, or they won't be able to redistribute it. But we looked at the announcement a bit more, and we came to realize that if you look carefully at the nature of that announcement, there was pretty no way that Sun was going to be able to weasel out. That really was going to happen. So we had to prepare for it. My next response was, okay, wait until we actually see the code. An announcement gets us absolutely nothing. It's interesting. Well, why can't we give us the code? It later turned out that actually freeing a piece of proprietary software is extremely difficult. And I can go into that a little bit later on. And then the really nasty question was, which license will it use? There is a problem in free software. You can have a piece of software that is distributed under a perfectly good free software license. Anybody can use it, but because of the way that the free software license is written, there is no legal way of combining it with some other piece of free software, which uses another perfectly good free software license that's incompatible. The good example of this is GPL and Apache. Now, this has caused a tremendous amount of pain in the free software business. Several times, Apache have had to re-implement pieces of software for which they already existed in perfectly good free version, simply because that license under which this free software was distributed was incompatible with the Apache license. Now, I don't know exactly what the terms in GPL, or it is GPL version 2, make it incompatible with Apache. But in a way, I don't need to know. All I need to know is that you simply cannot legally combine two pieces of code and distribute the resulting bundle if they are GPL version 2 of Apache. And GPL version 3, which was released about 6 months ago, has a whole lot of language in it to make it compatible with the Apache license. So I believe that particular problem has been solved. But there is still a nasty mess out there. It probably won't affect you much in a university environment, but as soon as you start shipping this stuff out there and trying to sell bundles of this combined code, it will make life extremely difficult. So that was my worry, that none of the GPL code that I've been working on would be compatible with the license that someone is going to choose. It causes, as I say, it causes a quite a lot of trouble. So, just to say where we are, GCJ is a compiler for Java, which was started at Cygnus in 1998. Now, the original author of GCJ, Per Bothman, started working on it when Java was really quite different from what it is now. Java is a very much richer platform than it was at the time. Has a lot more, just a lot more stuff that can do more things. At the time, it looked basically just like C++ with a garbage collector. It's metamorphed since then into something much, much greater than that. But Per Bothman just thought, well, Java looks like C++, why don't we just bolt a Java front end onto the GCC compiler and treat it like GCC? It's just C or C++. And Per Bothman described this as being a radically traditional idea. The idea of using very traditional compiler technology with this Java language. Shortly after that, GNU ClassPath started. And the only purpose of GNU ClassPath is to take all of these Java libraries that were provided by Sun and run them again from the specification in such a way that they could be used in a piece of free software and freely distributed. There always was this problem with Java from Sun, is that anybody could download it from Sun, but there was no way that the distributors of free operating systems could include it as part of the package, because it didn't come with complete source code, it had a whole bunch of restrictions. So, because of this, even though GNU ClassPath, it has to be admitted, wasn't that great, it did actually work, it did actually run a whole bunch of Java applications. And GCJ was pretty good, but again, not all that great, but it was enough to run a whole bunch of Java applications. So it got included in free operating systems, so it was in GNU Linux distributions like Debian and Red Hat and later Fedora and so on. So, a little bit later, 6 months later, Sun dropped this bombshell. GNU GPL version 2. This is the exact same license that we've been using for GCJ. The exact same license that we're using for ClassPath. So, not only had Sun chosen a license that was compatible with the code that we already had, it actually copied our license to ship their software. We were amazed. Astonishment simply doesn't cover it. Because over the years, Sun's lawyers have come up with all manner of complicated licenses for the various shared community source stuff that they had. And they've always written their own licenses very, very carefully. And we've been told by several other companies that, oh, you can't possibly use GPL. It wouldn't be safe. It wouldn't have the right clauses. And Sun said, yeah, we use GPL. It'll be fine. So all of a sudden, I've been working on GCJ and ClassPath for many, many years. All of a sudden, oh my God, I don't have a job. all of this stuff is now free. But what am I going to do? Not just me, the team of people working for me around me. So all of a sudden, okay, we know what Sony are going to do. Note that we still don't have the code yet. This is just a string of announcements. And in May, they actually got around to releasing the complete source code. And we say, okay, well, let's package it up and ship it as part of Fedora. And then we'll see how we get along. However, it wasn't all there. The only way you could actually get a working Java system out of the sources that Sun had made available was to add to it a whole bunch of binary blobs of pre-compiled code which you could download from a web server somewhere. It was pretty clear that we weren't going to do that. So, yeah, we don't like or trust weird bits of binary in our systems, and the rules don't allow it anyway. So it was never going to happen for Fedora. Over the years, I've got used to having the source code of every single piece of software that's on my computer. I don't fix bugs very often, but sometimes I do if they're really, really annoying. And I think after you've been using software in this way for a long time, assuming you have the appropriate skill set, it just becomes perfectly natural. Not only do you feel that having the source code for the software is better, you almost get to the point where you feel it's a fundamental entitlement, that you really do have the right to access all of the code for the software that you're using. And given the completeness of the GNU software, the Linux distributions now, that's pretty much what you can do. So, we're stuck because, okay, Sun have released all of this cool software, but we can't ship it as part of Fedora anymore. What are we going to do next? Notice at this point, I realize I still have a job. So, as I mentioned before, we had GNU Classpath, which was a kind of a semi-complete set of the core Linux class libraries. I'm wondering if one of the reasons that Sun actually chose the GNU GPL to license OpenJDK was so that we could do this. It did mean that Sun have still not, I think, quite finished freeing the entire JDK. I think there's still one or two bits missing. So if we hadn't done this, probably, I think maybe the last bit is there now, I'm not sure, but up until now, there simply wouldn't have been anything shipping. We didn't want to do this entirely with the Red Hat. I mean, as it happens, my team did pretty much all the work. But again, in the spirit of free software, we always prefer to do things openly if at all possible. So the GNU Classpath already had the infrastructure to host the free software project, so we just used that. They've already got the servers, they've already got the source code management systems and all the rest of it. So what we like, the GNU Classpath maintainer, who coincidentally also works for Red Hat, volunteered to set up the project at the GNU Classpath servers. And we started the business of merging these two code bases, merging the Classpath code into the missing bits of OpenJDK. So why did Sun not ship 5% of their code? Because they didn't own it. This is a really important lesson. And if there's one lesson I hope you can walk away from this talk with, make sure that when you use a piece of code in a real project, you know what the license is and you know what the consequences of accepting that license are going to be. Sun quite happily licensed all of this code from a variety of vendors to do things that Sun themselves didn't have core expertise in. Some areas, colour management in particular. And they went to the vendors who they licensed this code from and said, okay, well, we're going to free Java. You're going to free your software. And they said, I've stuck there. As a result of which, Sun found themselves in quite a hole. The other reason why Sun took such a long time between that announcement and actually shipping the code out, it was about a year, I think, was simply auditing a code base of that size to make sure that you own it all, to make sure that the license terms are correct, to check that nothing that is customer confidential has leaked into the code. It's incredibly hard. And at the same time, Sun were trying to get together the next release of Java, and they were forced to make a decision about just how many people they were going to have auditing all of that code, going through it, checking all the errors, making sure that the work was all fine. So, yes, that's the lesson. Make sure you know what you're going to do with a piece of code, and make sure that you have a license to do it. The next problem is maybe not so obvious. We have to build this thing. Okay, you've got this enormous slab of software. It's all source code. For the bits of mysterious bits of binaries, you found a way to replace those bits of binaries with code from within ClassPath. And well, how are you going to compile it? What are you going to compile it with? Sun always built it with the old version of OpenJDK. We couldn't do that. The reason we couldn't do that is that the servers on which Fedora and Debian and all the releases are built are only allowed to have free software on them. The reason for that is if you build a piece of free software or a piece of unfree software, you can't be sure that some bits of the old unfree software haven't leaked in there somehow. Maybe bits of things get copied by the linker or something. And that can get you in an awful lot of trouble. And these days, free software is such a big business that there's an awful lot of people out there with an awful lot of lawyers who really are out to get some of these people. So you have to be tremendously careful. So we couldn't build it with a previous version of the OpenJDK. And here we could use GCJ. GCJ, as I said before, wasn't perfect, but was a good enough Java compiler. And we had ClassPath, which was a good enough set of Java libraries. So that was enough to build OpenJDK with GCJ, and then we could build OpenJDK again with itself, doing a complete bootstrap of the whole process, which takes hours and hours and hours, as you might expect. But by the time you get to the end, you know that you've got the whole thing, you know that you've built it only using free software. And there is no dependency at all on a single byte of code that wasn't free. So, I called a meeting and we talked for a while about how we're going to do this. And over the next few weeks, a small team toiled heroically, I wrote here, which is true. People working very, very hard. The reason is I didn't want anybody to beat my team to it, because then there would have been a potential of having two separate free developments of the OpenJDK. I really didn't want that to happen. So it was essential to me, to us, to make sure that we were the first people on the street with a completely free version of the OpenJDK, because then if anybody would come to us who wanted to work on it, we would then be able to hold that core team of people together, and everybody would work together on it, on the server through the ClassPath promotion. So we did it. Some were expecting us to do it. They were not expecting us to do anything like that fast. I'm tremendously proud of the team at Red Hat that put this together very, very quickly. We had to go through huge amounts of code, finding which bits were missing and which bits we could replace, stubbing out a lot of things, deciding which bits we really cared about and which bits we didn't. I mean, for example, sound. The sound synthesizer stuff in Java didn't work at all. Java is an amazingly complete piece of software. I mean, the fact that it's just supposedly the standard Java library includes a complete MIDI synthesizer and this kind of thing, which you wouldn't think the core library really needed to have, but it's officially part of standard Java, so we have to support it anyway. But since then, some have been working too. I don't want to minimize Sun's contributions to all of this. Clearly they've done almost all of the work. I'm telling you about my side of it, because this is the bit that I really know about. So at the same time that we were patching things up with bits of ClassPath, Sun have also created replacements for most of these binary plugs. So all this is pretty positive, but clearly at this point you still don't have a complete working Java system, because the bits of ClassPath are not necessarily quite right, and we've had to patch out a few bits and pieces of stuff. But the most gaping hole in this is that you've only got ports for Intel architectures. Actually, that's not quite true. You've also got Spark running on Solaris, but I don't care about that, so I didn't mention it. This is really bad. We are used in GNU Linux distributions to always being able to support a whole raft of different processors, particularly things like PowerPC, ARM-based systems, and surprisingly, IBM mainframes. There's quite a lot of Red Hat work is actually done with these big mainframe boxes. So after a little while, we discovered that Sun did have a Java bytecode interpreter written entirely in portable C++. I think they'd used it for Italian ports way back when in the past. But it wasn't in the source code for OpenJDK, so we thought, right, this will work. It's not going to be very quick, but it will at least work. And so over the next few months or so, we were negotiating with Sun to try and persuade them to add this to the sources. And indeed they did. Our part then was to get rid of the last remaining little bits of assembly language that were used to do things like create stack frames, some of the exception handling, and so on. And to get rid of all of that and replace it entirely with portable C++, which we've done now. It's called Zero, the Zero assembler version of OpenJDK. We're also looking at adding a just-in-time compiler using LLVM. This is an interesting way of pointing out the difference between the free software approaches and the way that it's done in proprietary software. In free software, we rather work with the authors of LLVM, which has a JIT toolkit, rather than just having a special JIT which only does Java. It doesn't make sense to us to actually have to do that, partly because we don't have enough people to write just-in-time compilers for all these different architectures, and partly because we would just rather work that way. It makes more sense to us, if we're going to make modifications to a JIT, then we might as well make modifications to the LLVM JIT and share the results with everybody else. And we get the benefit then of having JITs written for a whole lot of different computer backends, including backends for computers that we've never even seen. This isn't going to happen soon. Last week, this JIT compiled its first ever method. Didn't do very much, but it did actually compile it. So we can actually generate code now. But I don't know when it's actually going to be going to be released. Also, LLVM itself, it started life as a research project. It's quite well thought of, it's quite well supported. I don't know how good it is. No idea at all. As soon as we start using this thing in Angular, we're going to find out. Now, the other thing that happened, which was all in hindsight, it was the best thing that could have happened. But it was a bit unfortunate, was that when Sun decided it was going to free up this code base, the code base was in fact a just the current top of tree they had. So they had their source tree. And they just snapshot, bang, that was it. So it wasn't Java version 6, because they've made some changes since then. It wasn't Java version 7 either, because nobody knows what Java version 7 is going to be yet. So what we'd actually done was shipped in Fedora a version of Java that didn't have a specification. It was pretty close to Java version 6, it was mostly compatible, but it wasn't really compatible with anything at all. This has a nasty consequence that it means that it's impossible for you to run any of the standard Java certification tests, because the standard Java certification tests for Java version 7 haven't been written yet anywhere. We certainly couldn't pass the certification test for Java version 6 because there's been some language changes. So somehow we had to figure out how we were going to get something that was really suitable for the people who use Fedora. Just a bit of a digression for a moment. It sounds like all that we actually did was patch up things, but it's not quite true. We did the Java plugin for the web browser, which wasn't in the sources for OpenJDK at all. I don't really know why, but a lot of people believe that's what Java is. It's a plugin for a web browser. And OpenJDK, as it was originally released, didn't have such a thing. So we did that. We also did Java Web Start, and we've got a whole bunch of other things that we're going to do as well. None of these things, technically speaking, are actually part of core Java libraries. They're all sort of things that you add onto it. But they are things that users find very valuable. So we have Java version 7 kind of sort of. And some, to their considerable credit, realized that this was going to be a real problem. And they had this idea of saying, well, remember I told you about how long it had taken to audit the source tree? In theory, they could have gone back to the Java 6 source tree instead of the Java 7 source tree and audited it again. But the thought of having to do this was so horrifying to some that they said, right, what we'll do, we'll create a list of anti-bugs, which are differences between the Java 7 as it was in the Java 6 specification, and we will fix all of these anti-bugs in the Java 7 source tree, effectively to downgrade the OpenJDK down to Java 6 so that it will be compatible with something. Now this has the fantastic advantage that at last we're shipping something that doesn't keep changing all the time. This is a stable piece of software. And they're not going to keep changing the number of arguments to them or something like that. And we realized pretty much immediately that this is what we really need for Fedora. It looks a little bit odd from the outside because people say, okay, so Fedora 8 has Java 7 and Fedora 9 has Java 6 and this is like better. And you have to say, well, yeah, it is really. It doesn't sound like it ought to be, but honestly it is. Up until this point, the software that we got was called ICT because, apart from anything else, we couldn't figure out how to sort out the trademark terms for OpenJDK. But Sun's lawyers, in their good sense, decided that they were going to open up the OpenJDK trademarks, and as long as we didn't mess with it too much. I think substantially identical or something like that was the legal phrase they used. We could call it OpenJDK. And in the meantime, they replace most of the binary plugs anyway, so the package that they were distributing and the package that we were distributing as part of the free software wasn't really substantially different anyway. One really odd thing about Java, one just incredibly weird thing about Java, is that historically Java, think about C programming language. In the C programming language, the standardization process is entirely open. People will write asking for clarification requests, people will make contributions to the C standard. They all get published, everybody gets to see them, everybody gets to vote. It's an entirely open process, but most C implementations, with the exception of things like GCC, most C implementations are proprietary. So you have an open specification, proprietary implementation. Java was completely upside down. You now had a completely open implementation of Java, but the Java specification process, the business of writing the future standards of the Java library, still requires people to sign non-disclosure agreements. This isn't really the fault of Sun themselves. They have a whole lot of partners, and their partners have been quite done over the years to keep things commercially confidential while the standards are being worked out. This has to end. Eventually, if Java is going to be the language of choice for free software development, which I really think it has the potential to be. This must end. The Java specification process must be opened up. Whether that's going to happen, I don't know. I don't suppose these various organizations that form the Java Community Program, which is the organization that does all the specification, are going to change their attitude very much, but it's a very awkward situation. Moment. There are still some Java specification changes going through the pipeline that require non-disclosure agreements. So, we've now got all of the pieces that we need to pass the Java technical compatibility kit. Java is unusual in that the key to having a compatible version of Java isn't necessarily to follow the specification, but to pass the technical compatibility kit. The TCK actually drives Java compatibility. It's the core piece. And to begin with, Sun didn't release this TCK. So even if you had the source code for Java and you could build it and you could run it and all the rest of it, you still weren't allowed to run the TCK. But after a short while, they decided to open it up so that anybody who's got OpenJDK is permitted to sign up for the TCK. That one is still under a very strict non-disclosure agreement. I don't know if that's ever going to change over time. But at least now we can run this TCK. It's a massive, massive job. I just couldn't believe this. There's one of my guys working for months and months just to run the test suite, to get all of the bits in there, to run it. There's tens of thousands of tests that test every aspect of Java, the source, the language at the source level, the compiler, the runtime libraries. They're all checked in minute detail. And we are getting pretty close. It's going to be a very significant milestone once we finally get there. And it will be, yes, it'll be the most significant single event since the first announcement. And it will allow us to call OpenJDK Java compatible. Note that until this actually happens, we cannot say that OpenJDK is compatible with Java. And then we can say Java is free. So, yes. Fedora 9 was released yesterday. I haven't had time to download it yet, but it's got this OpenJDK version 6 in it. We are pretty confident that it does all the things that it's supposed to do. But that was, we'll find out about that over the next few months or so. So if you're interested, you can download Fedora 9 and try it. It's a pretty good operating system. I certainly recommend it. That's it. Is there anything you want to know? Is there anything you'd like to say?
So the Fedora 9 is shipped with the OpenJDK Java compatible with up to version 6 of Java? Or?
That's right. Yeah. Version 7's got a bit quiet. Some will be developing it for a while, and we are going to watch it happen. But I don't think we're going to be tracking it in Fedora. Shipping two different Javas at the same time and trying to keep up to date on particular things like security fixes is going to be very seriously difficult. We just don't have the resources. So as far as I'm concerned, we're going to ignore Java version 7 for the next year or so until the specification and the TCK has come together, and that will be interesting for you.
So what is the relationship between IST and OpenJDK? I mean, how is it being named now?
It's OpenJDK now. There's no need to call it IST anymore. We no longer have any of the trademark restrictions that we have. And OpenJDK and IST version 6 are so similar that it's not worth arguing about. We might as well just call it OpenJDK and hope that everybody will just forget that it was ever called IST.
So you mean the code form that IST does commit to the OpenJDK already?
Some of it has. Some of the contributions that we made in IST, we have now fed back to Sun, and it's now part of the OpenJDK. We still need to have a separate code base ourselves because of the way that we build it using GCJ and ClassPath and all the rest of it. Also, because the way that Sun build code is not compatible with the way that free software projects usually get built, so we have to make a whole bunch of changes to it just to make it possible to build it on our servers.
So, is the OpenJDK trademark then allowed to be used by the ClassPath project, or is it a Red Hat specific thing?
No, the way it works is that you can call your code OpenJDK as long as it is substantially identical. Mm. Now, that's a phrase invented by a lawyer. What we think it means is that if it's at least 90% of the code in OpenJDK, then you're allowed to call it OpenJDK. So you couldn't use that to call it ClassPath, because it's entirely anything that's got 90%.
So if anyone, so Debian or anyone, if they included, they're allowed to use trademark name as well.
If they,
if say Debian included it, then they're allowed to use the name as well.
Oh yes.
Okay.
Absolutely anybody, as long as
there's not been audited for Fedora.
We had to back that particular bit of legalese back and forth several times between Debian and Sun and Red Hat and sort of going round and round and round, changing the words slightly each time until we finally got a form of words that everybody was happy with. It's always a bit of a problem when you get this awful mixture of computer programmers and lawyers trying to read each other's words. Because of course the words don't mean quite the same thing to the two groups of people. There's a tremendous amount of misunderstanding. Trying to explain to computer programmers, no, you can't compile the license, it doesn't work that way.
Okay. So the JDK kernel is its own generation machine? Or?
Yeah, the JDK is everything. It's all of the It's the sources for the whole library, and it's binaries of the virtual machine and the compiled code for the entire library. It's what's there. The way that we've done it in OpenJDK, we've got about six or seven separate packages with all of the various bits and pieces of it. Yeah, you've got source code for absolutely everything, which is where it came in, I think.
Do you have any plan for the JavaFX? Can you let some promise that JavaFX will be open source, but it's not open source yet.
Yeah.
So I think at least the situation is quite similar to Java 7.
Indeed. JavaFX is done by a different group within Sun, mostly I think we might then know. To be honest with you, and this is more to do with my own interests rather than anything else, I'm not quite sure exactly where JavaFX is going to go. I mean, certainly if it is free, then certainly we will package it. You can pretty much guarantee that. And you can also guarantee that if it's not free, then we're not going to package it. So we'll just go along with whatever they do. Certainly within my group, there's not much interest in that area. But then I want to point out there's quite a few different Java teams within Red Hat. My group is Core Java, the compiler, the virtual machine, the garbage collector, that kind of thing. There's lots of other people in different groups doing sort of higher level things, in particular JMOS.